major NFL legends, players, coaches, and media members from around the country, sharing their insights and stories with us year-round. Here on Thursday night, Tailgate.
And now back in making his seventh appearance with us here on Thursday Night Tailgate is Keith Millard. Let me remind you quickly about Keith's background. He's from Pleasanton, California, played his college ball at Washington State, where he was a Pac-10 top defensive lineman as a senior. In 1983, he won the Pac-10 Morris Award, which is given annually to the Pac-10's most outstanding offensive or defensive lineman. And last year, he was inducted into Washington State's Hall of Fame. He was a first-round draft pick, a 13th overall selection by the Minnesota Vikings back in 1984. Chose to come out and play in the USFL at that time for the Jacksonville Bulls instead. Came back to the NFL in 85 and played there from 85 to 93 for the Vikings, Seahawks, Packers, and Eagles. Was a two-time Pro Bowl selection in back-to-back years of 88 and 89. He was a first or second team All-Pro four times. And in 1989, he was the NFL's Defensive Player of the Year when he had 18 sacks. Over the course of his career, he had 70 sacks in 111 games. And after retiring, he became a coach. And he coached for the Broncos, Raiders, Bucks, and Titans. And in 2010, he was named one of the top 50 Vikings of all time and named to the All-Decade Team of the 1980s. And we are honored he is back with us again tonight here on Thursday Night Tailgate. Hey, Chris, Keith, Chris and Bob here. Thanks for coming on the show.
Hi, Keith.
What's up, guys?
How are you, Keith?
How you doing? It's been a while.
Yeah, I know it has. You been doing all right?
I didn't realize this is my seventh time on the show. You guys might have to put me on the payroll.
Indeed.
No, it's good to be back.
Hey, Keith, as you and I were discussing yesterday, I wanted to get your thoughts. You hold the record for the most sacks in a season by a defensive tackle with 18. You got the Rams' Aaron yep. Donald now kind of breathing down your neck at 16 and a half with three games to go. If he breaks the record, you happy or disappointed?
Oh, I'm happy. I mean, especially to have a guy like that do it. It's been a record for a long time, and it's a defensive tackle record. It's not the overall record, but it's something that I've always been proud of. I didn't even really realize it till, you know, maybe a few years ago. It came up somehow, and it never dawned on me, but it's pretty cool either way. You know, it's kind of my claim to fame now. I'm kind of using it whenever I can, but probably after this weekend, that'll be all in the past with Aaron Donald only one and a half, really two from breaking it. But I think the big news will be if he can break Strahan's record, and I'm rooting for him to do that as well. Because this is a guy that if you watch him play, and I've watched a lot of film and watched him on TV quite a bit. This guy's unstoppable. He's constantly double teamed. They always turn the protection to him, and somehow he still breaks free and gets to that quarterback, and he's doing it pretty quick. They're not like coverage sacks where it's taking 5 seconds. He's getting there, you know, in 3 seconds, you know, 3.5, 4 seconds. And, you know, so it's legit. I mean, he's beating people to get there, and it's fascinating to watch him. He's got a huge skill set and unbelievable passion for the game, and it's just really fun to watch him.
And Keith, I want to get your thoughts on the Vikings so far this season. I think many of us expected them to be much better than they are at 6-6-1 right now, and they've given up 9 more points than they've scored so far this year. So really thought the defense would be a little bit better. Thought the team overall would be a little bit better than just barely over 500. Your thoughts on what you're seeing from the Vikings?
I mean, it's obviously disappointing. I think, you know, all Viking fans had higher expectations with the talent that they have. I don't know where they're struggling. I guess they're struggling a little bit with the offensive line. You can't really use any of that as an excuse. To me, though, especially in the NFL, as far as talking about the offensive line, I can remember when I was coaching in Denver with Alex Gibbs as our offensive line coach under Mike Shanahan, 2001 through 2004, we never had a first-round draft pick on the offensive line. I don't think we had any draft picks on the offensive line. Alex was really big on intelligence and toughness and obviously technique, and he always got the most out of those guys no matter what. And I can also remember coaching against Denver with that same group. I mean, you look at them, and they don't look like top-of-the-line guys that you'd be worried about, but you had to be worried about them because they were tenacious, and they came after you. If they didn't, Alex Gibbs was going to put a foot up their butt. I mean, he was a little guy, but he was tough and ruthless himself and very intelligent in how he coached those guys. And he got the best out of them. And you know, that's the league. That's what we got to do. I remember when I got into coaching, Bill Walsh told me, you know, you can stay in this game for a long time if you can get guys to play at a higher level, no matter who they are. Get them to play at a higher level. That's the main thing. You know, I don't know what their situation is on the offensive line. I know they've had injuries in the past and things of that nature, but they got to get it together. Now they're in transition with a new offensive coordinator. And, you know, I coached with their pass offense coordinator, DeFilippo, when we were in Oakland. He was a quarterback's coach, and he was an up-and-coming, promising guy. He's smart. He's intelligent. He's had a lot of success in the league. As a coach, for sure, as a quarterback coach, and now they're going in a different direction. So that doesn't look good, and I'm sure it's you know, something they got to deal with in the locker room and things of that nature when those things happen. When you lose a coach mid-season, it's a negative thing, and it can be worrisome for sure.
Five questions for Keith.
Hey, Keith, happy holidays, and thanks for joining us again. You know, you had talked about your sacks record and just rushing the quarterback in general, and it got me thinking, Keith, about all the things needed for a defensive tackle, a guy inside to rush the quarterback, and it could be explosion, speed, athleticism, and shaking the offensive guard or whoever's blocking. There's so many things that go into it. Was there one skill more than other that you thought was the biggest important thing for rushing the quarterback? I know you have to combine a lot, Keith, but what was your main focus?
I think, you know, some of the things that you got to have consistently is a great get off. You got to be able to beat guys quick enough off the line where they're almost like in shock. You know, they're like rattled because of the quickness of it, and they're trying to adjust to it. But I think the main thing that you see with good rushers inside is they have a great feel for weight distribution. So when they get into guys and they initiate their first move, whatever their plan is, they can feel a guy getting out of balance and be able to counter that. It's not something that you could teach with a lot of guys. You try to, but it's just like if you're like, for example, if you're ripping up the field and you really get off on the ball and you're making an outside move and you feel this guy oversetting you or really putting a lot of weight into you to push you outside and up past the quarterback, when you feel that as it's happening, not after it's happening, as it's happening, you'll counter that guy. While he still has all his weight trying to push you outside or up the field and throw him in the direction where his momentum's going and be able to counter back inside or whatever you're doing. And I think that's what I had. And I had an instinct to feel blockers, use their weight distribution against them and be able to get off them in time to get to the quarterback. I think you see that a lot with some of these other guys that can rush inside. They start a move, they feel something, and they use whatever that offensive lineman's doing to them against them. And it's basically just really feeling it. It's also, you know, anticipation, knowing that you could get that based on your first move. But you see that a lot with Aaron Donald. He can set up his rushes like he can power you. And as soon as he feels you sitting on that power, bringing your weight back to him, he'll swim over the top and dump you on your face or, you know, spin out of it or whatever he likes to do. But it's like for every move he starts, he's always got something off it, and that's what gives offensive linemen fits. It's really hard to sustain block him when you have that kind of feel and quickness to counter. And pass rush, trust me, it's not always your first move. Most of the time, it's your counters that free you up. And when you have a good feel for weight distribution, it plays a lot into it.
I want to take you back to your rookie year, Keith, 85. Of course, that was Bud Grant's. Sadly, it was his last year. The coaching staff in general, though, you had guys like Jerry Burns and Mark Trestman and Pete Carroll. I just wanted to get your overall impression of that coaching staff in general. Did a guy like Carroll have the same enthusiasm back then as he does now?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. That guy is full of piss and vinegar and has more energy than anybody I've ever seen. Not just on the football field, in meeting rooms, when he's doing bed checks, whatever he's doing, eating lunch. I mean, this guy is high octane in his approach to coaching. And you have to be. You got to keep guys up. But in 85, we had a really good coaching staff. We had John Michaels, our offensive line coach, who's been there, from the 60s when the team started. Jerry Burns has been there. Came over from Green Bay with Vince Lombardi. He's a great coach. We had Monty Kiffin as our linebacker coach. Floyd Peters was probably one of the best defensive coordinators in the NFL at that time. We were always a top five defense. I think we were number one 3 out of the 5 years or 6 years that I was healthy. But we were always top 10, top five when he took over. We absolutely had some great coaches, especially on our defense.
Keith, as a guy who played in the USFL for the Jacksonville Bulls, I want to get your thoughts on the American Alliance of Football that's set to kick off this February, the new spring league. What are your thoughts? Do you think they've got what they need to do in order to actually make this one successful when so many others have failed?
You know, I tell you, I hope so, because in my opinion, we need some type of feeder league for the NFL to give these guys a little bit more development. Because some guys, when they come out, whether they're coming out of smaller schools or whatever the situation is, they're not fully developed. They have the size, speed, all that, but they're not fully developed. Could use these leagues to enhance their ability and get more experience and hopefully learn from a coach that, that could give them that pro experience. I don't know what kind of coaches they're going to have. And I don't know if this league will last. I mean, there's been 1,000 leagues that have tried, and some of them had great ideas and great potential, good plan to, start these leagues up. I don't know if the fans want it. I think if they could really focus on it being a feeder league like minor league baseball, which is pretty popular, and maybe if the NFL would back it, that's the problem is they've got to get the NFL to back it. And then the fans, I think, will take it more seriously, because it's not just getting the coaches or the former players or whoever it is to start these leagues. They've done that before and they haven't worked. The bottom line is, to me, unless you have the NFL stamp on it, it's really hard to make it.
Keith, one more before we let you go. And speaking of your time in the USFL with the Bulls, if you go back and look at the roster that you guys had, you had former Browns quarterback Brian Sipe on that team. You had a couple of Heisman Trophy winners in Mike Rozier and Archie Griffin. Plus, you had Von Johnson on the defense with you. Talk about what it was like, leaving Washington State and stepping onto a team that had those guys.
Yeah, that's a good question. Going into the USFL, I really didn't want to play in the USFL. My dream was always to play in the NFL, and all the players that I looked up to growing up through high school and even younger in college, and wanting to play with those guys, the best of the best. So I didn't know what my expectations were going to be. I really didn't know how to look at it going into the USFL. But what legitimized it for me was Brian Sipe was there. And then, obviously, Von Johnson was there, who was another big, talented guy coming out of college. And then when you got the Heisman Trophy winner there, one of them's on our team, and one of them's playing for the Generals, it kind of gave me the idea, maybe this is a little bit more legit than, that I'm really seeing it right now. So I gave it a chance, and I'm glad I did, because it was a good league. We had a lot of players from that league that went back to the NFL or went to the NFL from that league that ended up being Hall of Famers, all pros, big time contributors. I mean, there's a huge list of guys from that league that played in the NFL when that league folded that had great careers in the NFL. You know, Reggie White, Gary Zimmerman, Mike Rozier, you know, the list goes on with some of these guys. Herschel Walker, I mean, I could go on and on about all the guys that played in that league. I just think when we started to go head-to-head with the NFL and when Trump took over, well, when Trump got in the league, you know, he had a lot of money and a lot of these owners were just making it and they couldn't afford to do the things that Trump really wanted to do with the league and it just went belly up. But to me, it was legitimate. Going straight from the USFL to the NFL to an NFL camp, it really didn't seem any different to me. I mean, I had 11 sacks my rookie year and only started 5 games in 85 with the Vikings. And I had 12 in the USFL. And I can tell you right now, it was just as hard getting them. I mean, the linemen in that league were legit for sure.
Keith, before we let you go, remind our listeners how they can stay up to date with what you're doing over social media.
So I'm basically on Twitter. That's kind of where I stay in touch with my fans, especially Viking fans. But it's at KeithJMillard75. That's my address. And anytime you want to reach out and say hello, I'd appreciate it if you did.
Great stuff. Keith, you're fantastic. We can't thank you enough for continuing to come back now 7 times on the show. We're already looking forward to number 8. I hope that's real soon.
Thanks, fellas. I'll be expecting that check in the mail.
Indeed.
Thanks,
Merry
Keith.
Christmas. Happy holidays to you and your family.
Merry Christmas,
take care,
guys.
Yep. All right.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
That's the great Keith Millard. Always so much fun with Keith. We've got our next guest, Don Beebe, hanging on the line. We'll get to Don on the other side of this quick station break.